Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So Faster,
to Open the Voice Gate for June 11th, 2024. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed on all podcast catchers and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red boxes that sponsor this podcast, and you can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears. Join alongside, as always, Case Lowe. And Case, I am right now looking at a Yuko Miyamoto and Adami Kadaka in this Despe Invitational show. And is this the way forward for promoting in Japan? Are these kind of boutique shows?
I don't know, because I feel like it's funny. What a great question. I actually, this could be a whole big topic, because the U.S. Indies kind of did this when Janela was so far ahead of the curve, and it was like, oh, this is something different. Nobody's really done this. And then, I don't know, we saw a few of them, and then they just got worse and worse and worse. And I think the Despy show in particular, like, I don't know if I'm going to watch it, because it feels like one of those where it just looks way more fun on paper than it is in actuality. Like they did the I'd rather be in Mexico four-way, where it's like Eita and Daisuke Sasaki, and I think Doki might be in that match. It's like, correct, all right, that's like a cool thing on paper, but like, I don't know, it's probably not any good.
Yeah, it's a thing where this was the thing that was at the end of my list for my coverage for this week, and I knew that Dragon Kid and Eita made appearances at it, and it made me think, like, okay, Dragon Gate has the last Bayaden show coming up soon, and not necessarily have seen that success. That, I mean, this is completely sold out Corcoran Hall for the first time other than the Marigold launch that it's been this sold since, I guess, the J-pop star that DDT had come in,
which was super fun.
So what we're looking at is three completely, like, different, but in its own way, aberrant kind of conditions are the only ways to sell at this building. And that's kind of where it's left me, as I'm seeing. I forget that Hiroshi Tanahashi and Toru Yano do a 1980s manga gimmick when they team together. I always forget.
By the way, 985 for the Marigold Corcoran show yesterday, and that's not me hating. That's not a hater stance. That is just everybody, when Hall of Fame season comes around and we're talking about Ross Yogawa and people mention the sellout, 985 for the second show.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily have the brain capacity to even get into the whole Io Sky kind of thing and seeing people kind of show their ass about this, you know.
Another banner day from the Fightful crew.
I mean, they have people on that staff that know better.
Do they at this point?
Yeah, they have. I'm blanking on his name, and I sound awful, Oh, I'm blanking on their name. But they also do work for VOW that does a whole lot.
That's fair. Real quick, as we talk about the Despy show, can I talk about something that isn't Dragon System related real quick?
Oh yeah, please do. I feel like we didn't consider calling this a buffet episode, but this very much is a buffet episode of Open the Voice Gate this week. We'll get into Hakata eventually, but what is the thing you wanted to get into for a second?
I have talked on the show a number of times recently about how, you know, I don't have all the time that I would like to watch as much wrestling as I would like, especially older stuff. You know, I'm not watching a lot of historical footage at this point. When I do watch wrestling, it's obviously Dragon Gate, it's AEW, it's contemporary Japan stuff as I pick and choose. And, you know, New Japan had a good outing this weekend, so I'll check that out when I get to it. First time I'll watch New Japan since February. I'll do a little bit of Super Juniors catch up and then Dominion. But I stumbled in to a viewing project over the weekend, and it's not something, I don't know how I got on this, but I've had curiosity for a while now on one, understanding Perro Aguayo Jr. better, and two, understanding the rise of Mystico better, because I really want to learn more about Lucha history and Lucha culture, because I want to vote in Mexico this year for the Observer Hall of Fame, because Hamada is going to be on the ballot and Hamada is going to be in the Mexico category, not the Japan category. And, you know, you can listen to Cubs do audio or Ricardo do audio or Rob Viper do audio or Chris Zellner. And, you know, you could understand what they're saying and process it about Mexico. But I always feel like anything outside of that, if I were to repeat one of their talking points, but then somebody were to debate me on it, I wouldn't have anywhere else to go. You know, it's just all I know is the audio I consume, and I'm really trying to understand things better. So I fell into a wormhole of 2004, 2005 CMLL over the weekend. Mike, I'm obsessed. This is the most fun I've had watching new footage in such a long time. Maybe since I really dipped my toes in a 90s Joshi a few years ago with you and Alan. What's your knowledge of this time period of the promotion?
So 2004... I feel like that I concurrently, while it went on, absolutely no connection whatsoever. I was a high school senior in Fort Worth, Texas. I was not trying to get, I think it was Galavision that had CMLL back then. It's a big blind spot for me, at least like the Arena Mexico stuff for that time period.
So it's super interesting. And what I'm going to say, if you have any sort of knowledge of Lucha, will be like, no, duh, like, of course. But I didn't know this, so I'm going to share with everybody. But, you know, I was interested in just Perro and how Los Perros del Mal came to be. And so in 2004, they do the Leyenda tournament that used to be dedicated to Santo, where everybody would, you know, the winner of the tournament would win the trophy with El Santo on it. So he beats Foligno. Really fun match. I'm learning I love Foligno as a wrestler. Very reminiscent, not in-ring style-wise, but very reminiscent of Genki Horiguchi, where he's been around for forever. He seems to be relatively respected. And then there's like seven or eight matches where you're like, oh my God, he's the best wrestler in the world. It's like the same thing with Genki.
Yeah, and it's something where I feel like most of the Foligno I've seen has been a much older Foligno. You could see that there was like that in him. You know,
like, yes, yeah,
it's something that like it does not surprise me. 2004, he's just blowing you away right now.
He's really good. There's a on YouTube, there's a Santo Foligno match from Monterrey that I think is one of the best Lucha matches in history. That match is kind of what I like wrestling should look like. But anyways, Perro beats Foligno in the finals of the tournament. Perro Sr. is sitting front row in Arena Mexico. So El Hijo del Santo comes out. He presents Perro Jr. with the trophy of El Santo. And then Perro Jr. cuts this promo about how his father was the better wrestler. El Santo was never the star that Perro Aguayo Sr. was. And then breaks the plaque, the trophy of El Santo over the head of El Hijo del Santo, kicking off this amazing heel run. Well, coinciding with that is the rise of Mystico. And I started thinking about greatest wrestler ever, 2016. So 8 years ago now, where I wasn't watching any Lucha. I wasn't interested in Lucha. I didn't like Lucha. I voted for Negro Casas that year based off of a lot of his work that I had seen from Japan, the very little bit I had watched of him in Mexico, and quite honestly, just peer pressure where it felt like you had to have a luchador on the ballot. And so I remember at the time thinking like, oh, I bet a lot of people are going to vote for Mystico. And then you go back and read the PWO thread, and it's not that they hate Mystico. It's not that he's overrated, but nobody is really sold on him. And I started thinking with, you know, the 8 years that have passed in his return to CMLL and the star power that he has now, once again, like, oh, this is a guy that should probably be examined as one of the 100 best wrestlers in the world. Let me go back and try to watch it from the beginning and see if he was good in 2004, see if he was great in 2005, you know, see if it all makes sense. Oh my God, does it make sense? It is, the promotion reminds me so much of current day Drangy, which is why I want to talk about this briefly, because you have these really exciting young wrestlers, you know, the Peros guys and Mystico, and then you still have this old guard of guys that were stars in the late 80s and in the 90s that they don't stick out because they're old and not good, but they do stick out. You know, there's a clear delineation between the old crew and the young crew, and it's a little bit like what we have with Paradox and what we have with say, Zebrats. But I have a YouTube playlist going. I'll drop it in the Open the Voice Gate thread on the Voices of Wrestling Discord. It's the stuff that I can find from the summer of 2004 through, where I'm compiling now is like the summer of 2005. I don't know why this is the case that everybody that uploads Lucha on YouTube outside of Roy Luchier doesn't put the date on the videos they upload. That has been a maddening experience trying to figure out what six man was what. But
buddy, the times I've had to retranscode people's dates from Dragon System footage, I completely get what you're saying.
No one is putting the dates on anything. I don't understand why. It's really, really disappointing. But I don't know. It's a ton of fun. The thing that I love that really like got me excited, got me really into this, and it just goes to show you how unimaginative American wrestling has become across every single level is, you know, CMLL does the grand, and this is where I'm going to butcher Spanish, I apologize, the grand Alternativa tournament. Is that even close to what I'm trying to say?
Grand Alternativa.
Thank you. So they do that tournament where it's a veteran and a young guy.
Right. Yeah, which I think is one of the coolest formats of a tournament.
It's a genius concept. Yeah. It's awesome. So 2004, and this whole upload's there, it's Santo and Mystico as partners. Like, that's the other thing, is Santo's in the promotion and is kicking ass. Again, kind of like a Yamato. And then you have all these young guys, you know, where I think Pero's very, very similar to Shun. And I think everybody in Japan, no matter what the promotion is, they're kind of waiting to see if they have a Mystico waiting in the wings. But it's Santo and Mystico, and they have this awesome match with Mysterioso and Mysterioso 2. And then they go to the finals, sorry, spoiler alert for 2004 CMLL, and they wrestle Dr. X and Ultimo Guerrero, and that match is incredible too. And I put a clip on my Twitter of Santo making a comeback in that match because it's the most flawless thing I've ever seen. It's a really interesting promotion. And as somebody who I would say for most of my life covering wrestling was very much against Lucha, didn't like it, didn't care about it, I'm now super into it, even though, you know, not everything connects. I mean, I've watched some hype matches throughout this thing that I'm just like, oh, I don't understand what that was about. But it's fun. It's guys that I'm not totally aware of. The names that I'm aware of are delivering. I mean, Pero Jr. is just incredible. Mystico is unbelievable. Santo at age 40 at this point is kicking ass. It is really fun. So I'll put the playlist in the Discord.
So I think I have a transition for you that I've been sitting on for a couple minutes.
Please.
So that was Santo's last big run in CMLL, correct?
That's correct.
Speaking of splinters that kind of don't really go anywhere like Totos X Totos, let's talk about the Gleet show that happened in Nagoya this weekend.
Oh, good Lord.
I'm sorry that was just a fastball over the plate I had.
No, you're absolutely right. The good Lord is at the existence of Gleet, not at the existence of you.
I'll take that for here. So Gleet version extra was in Nagoya International Pavilion for probably one of their last appearances that they will have in this building. This was the show that had the Onita exploding bat match. Also had Hayao Tamura versus L. Lindemann in a time where I don't know if we talked about it on air or not. We both were kind of expecting maybe some things to turn around there. But boy, Gleet as a promotion is at a utter, I don't want to say shambles, case, because I feel like I'm saying it in the incorrect like British form here, but I just, that was the most bizarre show I've seen all year, I feel like.
So I try to make a conscious effort to not watch wrestling that I know I'm not going to like. You know, unfortunately, I have to see NXT clips on my timeline. When Muto was going strong there in Noah, I would watch the Muto matches because I felt like I had to, but I really hated those and they put me in a bad mood. For all of the wrestling that was this weekend, the two Dragon Gate shows, the New Japan show, the Noah Corican, Sunday morning I wake up and I say, let's put on some Glate. I am morbidly curious. It's not that this show looked amazing, but I am morbidly curious to see what this show is going to be. And when I tell you, I watched the last half of this show and then I went to the grocery store to try to cleanse myself, you know, to try to make sense of what happened. And I'm in Target muttering to myself like a crazy person about how much I hated this show. This had everything that sucked about pro wrestling in the course of one single show. And before I throw it back to you, you know, I don't know if you do this, but whenever I watch Glate, I view it through the lens of, if I was living in whatever market their show was in, you know, whether it's Tokyo or Kyoto or Osaka or Nagoya, would I buy a ticket to this show? And then there's the level up of, hey, if I live in Tokyo and this show's in Osaka, would I make the trip to this show? Because like it or not, you and I and the people that listen to this podcast are part of the group that Glate is objectively trying to reach. We are their target audience. You know, we might not be buying tickets to all their shows in Japan, but they want everybody listening to this podcast to like these shows. And I not only wouldn't have bought a ticket to the show, again, morbidly curious, knew the lineup wasn't good on paper, but this, in my mind, this killed Nagoya. I'm so curious to see what they do next time they're here, especially because they're not going to be able to run this building. This is going to be one of the last wrestling shows in this venue before it goes under construction.
Yeah, it's such a bizarre retirement road that they're doing. So Kaz Hayashi retiring at Tokyo Dome City Hall, current G-Affinity champion with Shima. We've known almost for, I feel like it was like last November, maybe it was the Glate vs. Mega show at Ryogoku that we knew that his retirement was coming up. So they've been doing big moments for him. And the biggest one was, at least it felt like, other than the Michinoku Pro appearance that he's about to make this week, it was this blast death match that just feels like objectively, like Nagoya, they do, this is a building that has always been open to do like explosion matches. So like this is the one that, like, I know that Stardom, when they had theirs with like Io Shirai, it was held in this building too. It is just something there. And just such a bizarre vibe about this. Like, as the targeted audience, how would I feel about a show that at a certain point, Kazuhiko Nakajima just shows up, pops a can of sake, the owner of Ledette's right next to him, and he just, like, they keep on doing camera cuts to him throughout the entire match, and then he disappears. And he comes out like in a bathrobe. And at that point, you just have to be completely, if you're coming in as a Dragon System fan and as a someone who they are objectively trying to target, it might be the most off-putting show that they've done.
Absolutely. I mean, let's not rush through this. I mean, let's really spend a second.
I took full notes about my thoughts on everything except for the Blast Death match, because I knew that there was some bullshit that was happening afterwards, and I just wanted to let it soak in. So, did you, I know that you said you've watched like half the show. Did you catch the opener or the MXM appearance?
Okay, so I watched everything but the opener and then the six-man tag that was Black Generation versus the other guys. So the Mansoor match is like, it's like a fun 0-1 match, I guess, like early 2000 0-1.
Very much that energy, especially like with Mace in particular, with Masson. It was very much like, it was like, oh, you are the big person that they spent money to bring into this show.
And I don't understand why, because I don't think he's ever going to be G-Rex champion. And I don't know. Again, it was, you know, the best thing I can say about this is that it was harmless, but I also don't know what it accomplished, because now you've got outsiders who knows, you know, I think they're booked going forward. So I don't want to say this is their last show, but let's say they work through Tokyo Dome City Hall. Okay, well, now you've got two guys who are going to be gone July 2nd, and they are once again beating Jun Tancho and Soma Watanabe. So I don't know what this accomplishes.
Right, and you have it to a level where Tancho and Watanabe have been kind of pegged at this, like, promising up-and-comer level in this promotion, especially Watanabe. Tancho, I feel like Jun Tancho is living his worst reality right now. I would love to see Jun Tancho just, like, go off and, like, I don't know, just, like, he's got to have better options.
I wish he'd end up in All Japan. I think the All Japan Juniors division right now would take care of him.
He would be a fun, like, addition to, like, a junior roster. But, like, Soma Watanabe is someone that they have clearly have, like, marked out as, like, a long-term guy. What do they get out of this? Because it's something that... it's not like MXM are going to win the G Infinity title, so this one's bleeding to anything. And what are they going to really get towards the end of this? If you're Soma Watanabe, who's someone who's like been in like title pictures before, and you're just kind of get just out and out getting jobbed out in this match, it's got to be frustrating, and it's just off putting in a way.
Yeah, no, I mean it was. I don't see the advantage to bring them in. It didn't make a splash. I mean, I don't think anybody outside of the normal great American audience was like, oh my God, Mansoor is there. You know, we got to check this out. And again, they weren't even bad, but they also weren't great. So, you know, there's that. And then you get into Fujita and Kendo Kashin against Irie and T-Hawk. And I mean, I can't believe this match. I can't believe they did this to T-Hawk.
T-Hawk knew it was being done to him too. Like, that was objectively the funny thing here. So this is a match that ends up being about the fact that Kaz Fujita has an energy drink. That's what this match is about, and T-Hawk knows it for all 6 minutes of it, and in the lead up after it he gets the way that T-Hawk jobs here is really like worth getting into, because at a certain point it looks like T-Hawk got like rocked and then just took a power bomb that looked rough and just got eaten up. Your former G-Rex champion and Shima's golden boy just absolutely destroyed by like one of the guys that there's no way he's ever going to get that back.
I feel like this match was every parody of a Kashin and Fujita match. This was, you know, there's like the crew that would be like, oh, Fujita's not that bad, he doesn't actually do that. And then you could just show them this tape and you're like, no, he's every bit as bad as people say that he is. I mean, this was appalling. And this would be the kind of thing, you know, if T-Hawk had less of a weird career, this would be the kind of thing where, you know, I'd go to the back and make the call to my friends in Noah, make the call to my friends in All Japan and go, all right, what do you guys have for me? Because I'm not doing this anymore. I was offended on T-Hawk's behalf when you think about the things that he's tried to do for Glade, the relationship that he has with their office, to send him out there like that. And again, a vicious, not fun to look at power bombed in the match. This is a dud if there ever was one. I couldn't believe this.
And this is also, we haven't gotten to this point, case. What has been the one thing that I think objectively we could say that Glate does better than Dragon Gate? It's their production.
Yes.
They've always put the money into it. They always have good video packages. Some of them you could tell that they are using some freeware in on it, but it has a little bit more of a production scene that Dragon Gate has never really had and only really attempted at a very short period of time. There was bad sound and cameras throughout the entire show. So you even have that where the opener was completely unwatchable because of the, that was the thing I'll say about the opener. The opener completely unwatchable because the one, like the microphone cables was completely shorting out and they had to go and use the ring announcer's microphone to get some sort of audio.
I don't say this to be a dick because I've noticed that for the people that parachute in for Dragon Gate's big shows, you know, they'll complain about the crowd noise sometimes. And Dragon Gate is on such a shoestring budget, and it's a critique of them. It's, you know, it's definitely a bug, not a feature, but it's a critique of them because the English mix is not as strong as the Japanese mix. And a lot of time the crowd gets buried underneath the English audio. So the crowd is hotter than they may appear. During the Fujita Kashin match, I had to check my TV to make sure that I wasn't watching on mute. And that sounds like a hacky joke. You know, that sounds like I'm being harsh for the sake of being harsh. I am not. It was so quiet in that building. Again, it was just, it was one of the more shocking things I had ever seen. If it was Tatsuo and Watanabe, if it was, you know, even, you know, Keiichi Sato or somebody like that, it would be like, all right, that sucks, whatever. But it was T-Hawk they did this to. Just, it was appalling.
Yeah, it just completely... I wonder if there's some decisions that are being made in that company given what's happened on the show. And it happened after a relatively hot match, the six-man tag. So Daimonji turns on Yan's family to join Black Generation or National. He's been doing the old Kagatora unit skipping gimmick case.
Oh, boy.
Originally member of Bulk Orchestra. Then joining Jan's family, turns on this. The reason that you could be like, hey, did something else happen production-wise? I need to check this. That was a pretty hot turn. The crowd was up for Daimonji turning on Ito after they kind of put everything behind them. Like that was a hot moment immediately deflated by energy drink shit. Because like then they like the match itself, like outside of the powerbomb and the fact that T-Hawk, one of the people that at one point was the building block of this promotion, getting jobbed out. You have the fact that it was all in service of whatever energy drink is, because they had a special announcer come out that Irie and T-Hawk had to go and harass. And it just, it done if there ever was one.
SBK and Takuma versus Ishida and Izuchi. Takuma is no longer a good pro wrestler. I feel very comfortable saying that. I don't know where you stand.
I thought that this was really sloppy. I thought that this was, on all four parts, I thought that this was pretty. Like, one of the, for SB in his hometown, he's never looked as shendy as he looked here. And
yeah, he's got like the weird, like, Asami Kadoka hair, with like the Kool-Aid red. I wasn't even
sure.
Well, he was
reusing part of his Dead or Alive gear they had for the cage match. Like he's chopping together gear, and it's just like it's something where the whole SB Taku team, for like their sake, it's just like they need to go separate ways and reassess some things. The vibes,
yeah,
are completely
because
off.
I still like, look, I'm always gonna have a little bit of Takuma stock, or I'm sorry, not Takuma, but Kento. Like, I still watch Kento, and he's not what he was. The aura is largely
gone.
He has
moments. He has moments where he pulls it back.
Exactly, he has moments, and you know, I would still look at him if I was. I guess All Japan is the landing spot, or DDT, because those guys are not going to go to Noah. You know, I would look at that and just think like, oh, maybe, you know, maybe there's something there. But the Takuma thing, I'm just fully out on, because he had 6 months in Dragon Gate where he was on the road full time. He was working against the best and most polished wrestlers in the world. And that was 2 full years ago now. You know, it was June of 2022 when he went to Mexico. And I think he's washed. I mean, I think this guy is so far off the beaten path. He is so sloppy. He has lost whatever charisma that he had. And again, this is not me being a hater. I wish the guy was amazing. I thought the guy was one of the best wrestlers in the world 6 months into his career. I would love it if that continued, but it is gone, and I don't know if that one's coming back.
It's wild, because there will be moments in this match where Takuma will show incredible body control, or at least show like a moment of like, oh God, this could have almost gone really bad. But Takuma has like, it will remind you of the Striga comment that Takuma Fujiwara at times looks like he was born to pro wrestle.
Yeah.
And then immediately you're like, oh, BGI is kind of eating their lunch throughout this entire match. Like, I know you sold all your Izuchi stock. Are you back in on him now that he's turned heel and with Ishida, or are you just still? It's like a weird, like, he comes off like such a creep at this point that it works, but it's just, it's wild that, like, the person that I feel like in this match who came out the best is the one Dragon Sister, the one not Dragon Sister person, because Ishida might as well not have been there. Like, he was just going through the motions.
To answer your question, no, I'm not in on Izuki. I'm completely out on him. And, you know, I mean, this was like a 3-star match. It wasn't the abomination that the tag before it was, but it also, you know, if you watched this, if this was your first time watching Kento, Takuma, or Ishida, you would have no idea that at various points in their careers, Takuma was considered as highly as he was. Ishida was a guy that people were clamoring to be pushed harder, pushed as a main eventer, and that Kento was Kento. It's just, it's all gone, and it sucks. You know, this is the kind of thing that if I was going to really care about this promotion, which again, they're targeting somebody like me, they're targeting somebody like you, they're targeting the people listening to this. This is the kind of thing that has to deliver. And it looked like Dragon Gate parody, you know? It was just, it wasn't any good.
And you had the finish where BGI, they built the, like, the last 3 to 4 minutes around the SB shooter, and then late, and then in, like, a final stretch, there's a metal shot, and then Ishida rolls them up. And guess what? BGI get Kazayashi's retirement match.
That's insane. I said this in the Glee channel on the Discord, where it's like,
it's wild. It's wild that they're doing this.
Yeah, why would you not have Ishida and Izuki beat them earlier for the belt so they could have defended against Kento and Takuma on the Tokyo Dome City show, and then you could have had a cool Kazayashi retirement match. Glade's gonna book the one retirement match in Japan that doesn't draw.
Oh, it is going to be a complete, just utter mess, because you also have the fact that Hayato Tamura will, like, defend against Yuki Ino of DDT, and you just sit here going, like, oh, don't think Tamura should really, like, as champion, we've seen this now, I think it's ready to move on from here. And the, like, your top two matches are completely locked up with that. And the only thing that looks half interesting on that show is, hey, El Lindemann's going to try UWF rules. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's annoying, but it's interesting. I mean, I'll certainly give that a morbid curiosity watch. I would love to know, and we won't ever know, because a lot of the people that we know that were super tied into Japanese offices for a while, it seems like they might have lost those sources. But it certainly seemed like Glate was really tight with New Japan for a minute, and now it seems like that is definitely not the case.
Who are they tight with now at this point?
Nobody. They're not on the Japanese, the Come Together or All Together shows. It's Dragon Gate.
Yeah, and I mean, the DDT show clearly was a paid show that they were trying to do, bring in DDT and try to get more fans in there. But it just, I mean, essentially, like, maybe everyone from that Glate version and DDT show, maybe all of them traveled to Nagoya, because that seems to be like the only audience they have outside of their bigger shows is about 750
people. The thing with the DDT show, glad you brought that up. That is not an indictment on DDT in the slightest. It is the same thing as the Dragon Gate Noah show 2 years ago, where Jay on this podcast said, yeah, I didn't watch it. You know, we didn't think of it as a Dragon Gate show. That was not a DDT show, and they're not exactly lighting the world on fire right now, but that was a great show with DDT guys. Same energy as Dragon Gate Noah, where one company's fan base seemed to be completely apathetic towards it, and the other one wasn't excited about it you know, in any way either. It was, you know, just two different, like, oh, I guess that's what we're doing here thing. So I don't know, I'm baffled. You know, just the Hayashi thing real quick, you know.
Oh, I had a DDT question I wanted to ask before we get to this. So it's all but confirmed that, like, the Noah relationship at that point was a pay-for-play kind of situation. At a certain point now, it's much more on even keel, but for a time period, Noah was essentially hiring Dragon Gate to help out some of their extra shows.
Noah was covering the finances of their wrestlers appearing on Dragon Gate shows. That I feel comfortable saying.
If you're DDT and everything that's happening around Cyber Agent right now, I don't know how good I feel about getting like essentially sold out to do a half full Corcoran Hall and probably 1,800 if lucky, probably more realistically 1,300 to 1,500 people at Tokyo Dome City Hall. I don't know how I feel about that if I was a member of DDT.
Can I make the counter that if a tree falls in the forest and nobody hears it, you know, does it really fall?
Completely justified. Completely justified. Well, a sound that did happen, Case, this blast death match, they made sure that we all knew that it was going to be loud. 10 minutes of a Tsuchi Onita barbed wire.
Oh, real quick, Tamora Lindemann. Oh, boring. I don't understand what happened to Tamora.
Dry.
Tamora's reign, he had the awesome match with T-Hawk, and then a disappointing match with Kalino Del Mal, a disappointing match with SB Kento, a really good match with Minoru Tanaka, but it was very much a Minoru Tanaka match, and then a really disappointing match with Takanori Ito. And then this Lindemann match, I mean, just dry as a bone. Nothing got me into this.
The crowd was most into Linda's near falls, like after the so Tamora retains, gets his fifth defense as fifth medal with two consecutive layers, including one that he basically plays pinball off the ropes and decks him with. The crowd wasn't up for it whatsoever for the finish. They were only really up for like Linda's high spots and deep kickouts, it felt like.
Yeah, I was disappointed because I thought if anything was going to save this show, I've sold my Tamora stock, at least for the sake of this G-Rex run. And, you know, we'll see what happens after he drops the belt. But I thought Lindemann would be able to pull something out of him. Lindemann is so obviously this company's MVP historically.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this was, you know, two and three quarters, maybe just really, really boring.
All right. You hated it more than I did. I was I was a bad 3.25 on it because I thought that the crowd was up for Lindemann. Like there were people in Nagoya who were really hoping that Lindemann became G-Rex champion.
Well, and, yeah, I mean, I was one of them.
And it's now in a situation where you look down to Tokyo Dome City Hall and you have Yuki Ino, and you would almost be at like a position where it's like, can someone come in here and even like as an outsider just take this thing and do something with this belt and let Tamora kind of rebuild, and then whatever this dissolution that's going to come out of Bulk Orchestra kind of rebuild him from there. But it just looks like they're just going to continue down this path with Hayato Tamura.
I don't get it. I really liked Tamura, and he was the one thing that you could point to that was definitely working about this promotion before he won the belt. And I mean, you look at like Kakuta's Dreamgate run last year, right? And that was a disappointment, but I think Kakuta long-term is going to be much better than Tamora. This felt like this could have been the apex of Tamora's career, and it could have really put him on a different level in Japan. Because again, look at the guys he defended against. It was Galino Del Mal and SBK and Tanaka and Ito and Lindemann. Those could have been five amazing matches. And if those were five amazing matches, I think everybody would talk about Tamora as an upper echelon Japanese wrestler. And it's instead gone the other way, and it's super disappointing.
And it's situationally where you're in this promotion that in some ways it feels like it's very ahead of things, but in some ways it feels like it's so stuck in the mud, and you're just like, oh, what is Tamora's like future after this? Is he going to go and join Strong Hearts? Like Strong Hearts that's now way past the sell-by date at this point. It's just like, how do you revive him after this? And at the same time, you're like, oh, how are you going to do really anything with anyone in this promotion? Like BGI, they've completely, it's very clear that the Big Lucha relationship is over. And a lot of the original BGI members no longer work for Big Lucha and are out of Black Generation proper to begin with. So it's like, what is going on with this promotion that then has this blast death match main event?
I mean, just awful, you know, another dud on this show. I have no patience for this sort of thing. You know, luckily I'm not a completist by any means. If I'm going to watch a show and Onita's on it, I can normally just skip Onita and move on with my life and feel better. But it was the main event. It was Shima in a death match. I wanted to see what it was like. And, you know, it wasn't a train wreck that was kind of fun to watch. It was just bad. I left this show. I think it's the worst Glade show I've ever seen. And I really don't know where they go unless the plan is, you know, maybe a Yamamura G-Rex championship. Maybe they finally do an angle where they break up Strong Hearts. But if you're Strong Hearts, that brand is more valuable than Glade is. So why would you want to break up? And I don't know what else. I don't know what the three-month, six-month, or 12-month plan is for this promotion.
You know, it's a real frustrating thing is, like, you say, like, all these things that they kind of need to take care of. What they're going to do instead is Ryuichi Kawakami doing an anti-Glade gimmick. And I imagine he's going to probably be matched up with Katsuhiko Nakajima. And that's what they're going to try to, you know, pull themselves out of. So it makes no sense. Like, so in the post-match, so yeah, Kes Hayashi beats Onita. They do, like, Shima and him do a joint double blast shot to get the win. As they are leaving, Kawakami goes, grabs the president of Ladette, brings him into the ring, and him and Onita holds up the president to hit him with the blast bat. Afterwards, Glade has stated that Ryuichi Kawakami's contract did they say that his contract has been removed, or like the phrasing was weird with it, but like the contract will end on June 1st after the Tokyo Dome City Hall show.
Let me see what I can find here. Hold on. Glade. Let me go to the Glade section.
Yeah,
here.
It was in the Weird Ladette Twitter account.
The president of Glade announced that he will be terminating the contract of Ryuichi Kawakami after he used the blast baseball bat on him at the end of the June 9th show. After the act, Kawakami stated that he has started war with Glade and that he is henceforth anti-Glade. Suzuki called his actions heinous and that he should be punished for it, and his contract will be terminated after the July 1st show.
So just basically
yeah, so there's that.
Yeah, so that's their direction,
I guess. I mean, I don't know. Kawakami would be awesome in All Japan. I keep on saying that about the Glade roster. Maybe they should just fold and all go to All Japan because it would make the Japanese scene better if some of these guys weren't here. I don't know what they're doing.
It's a bizarre state of affairs over in Glade and in Ladette. And we will wait and see how this all kind of pans out. Did see in the After Effects, Suzuki is tweeting at Kota Ibushi again.
Here we go, brother.
Yeah, God, just the most toxic promotion possible.
The perfect guy to fill Osaka number one.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to try. They'll pay for it, but it'll be the exact same thing that happened at Ryogoku when they only got 2,000 people when they brought back a desiccated husk of Kota Ibushi.
That's when you know Japanese wrestling discourse is different than it was like 7 or 8 years ago, because I feel like Glade scheduling a show for Osaka number one should have been one of the main stories of the day in our bubble, and it kind of came and went. And
it would have been a Joe and Rich like 2016 tangent for 47 minutes.
And I just people aren't grasping how insane that is.
And I think also you look at how the scene is in a, like, I mean, we're not financial analysts, but that scene is in a full on depression right now. So, like, what is the difference between making attempts there for this promotion? I can get how it gets a little bit just overlooked. But boy, is it something where I look at this, and I'm like, wow. Well, you already have his trainee who's not very good. You bring around like his other friends who are okay. So, yeah, he's going to probably be in the main event at Edeon 1 in the fall.
Crazy, crazy. Speaking of a depressed Japanese economy, sorry to, I'm stealing your number one position here, but I found a transition. I'm going to take it. It seems like Ricochet might be back in play for not only Dragon Gate, but for Japan as a whole.
Yeah, so as of Monday, it is widely believed, and no one's discounting, that Ricochet has his contract is either lapsing, or his last appearance was on Monday and his contract will lapse soon. But Ricochet is now a free agent, the first ever foreign Open the Dreamgate champion, absolute Grand Slam winner. And he's now one like the more interesting free agents, I feel like, in a long time, because there's a lot of different ways we can go with it.
Well, it's funny, we just did the Dead or Alive 2014 show where we tried to explain to everybody how big of a deal Ricochet used to be.
Yeah.
And now I think is his time. I think about Ricochet, I think about this with, oddly enough, Rey Mysterio too, where it's like, oh, if those guys just would have waited, you know, if Rey just would have held off and signed with AEW at the beginning, because he was in the All In main event, if he just would have waited, and if Ricochet could have held off another year and just waited for the dominoes to line up with AEW, those guys would be thought of so much more highly. I mean, imagine Ricochet in 2019, 2020, 2021 AEW. You know, we would think of him, because he is, as an all-time great. And unfortunately, there's an entire generation of even hardcore wrestling fans at this point that weren't there for peak Ricochet and don't understand the star power this guy had, whether he was working a Best of the Super Junior show, or he was working Kobe World, or he was working an American indie. It didn't matter. He was the biggest star seemingly everywhere he went for a good 3 or 4 year period there. I know you and I have talked privately, and a few people have asked us, you know, hey, politically, you know, Ricochet last appeared in Dragon Gate in 2017. Obviously, Shima was his mentor. Politically, where does he fall in line? And I guess this ties into the Glate conversation we just had. I did some talking today, more on that in just a second. At least from what I can tell, Dragon Gate is very open to the idea of, if he's available and if they can make it work financially, they are Team Ricochet. So we can only hope that that works out.
I think, as we've seen through Flamita's return, it is more open towards people that might have been more aligned with Shima in the past, as long as you aren't like.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich, co-host of the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. We'll get right back to your show. Just want a brief moment to tell you about a sponsor that we have here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network, Arena Club. Now, Arena Club, man, they're great for card collectors. If you're a card collector out there, this is the read for you. And in this hobby, you know, I know you know, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up. We think, oh man, here's the 86 Michael Jordan Fleer rookie card. It's going to be in this pack. It never is. It's never in that pack. And usually you don't have zero, you have zero transparency on available cards and hit rates. It's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com. The only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each and every one. And when I buy slab packs from Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. And I've talked about before, I go to card shows, I grab random packs, I have fun opening them, but I know there's nothing good ever in there. There never is. There's never going to, why? That's why they're available to buy, because there's nothing good in there. That's not the case anymore with Arena Club slab packs. They're better than those mystery packs, because they have a display of available cards. They have a display of the hit rates. They have a display of the grading. You know exactly what you're getting. It's transparent. And Arena Club, more than that, they're an awesome place for collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying. If you're a card collector, you get it all at Arena Club. Now, Arena Club slab packs are revolutionizing the repack game, like we said, with full transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed into your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. And the Arena Club grading process is great. It's fast, it's accurate, it's transparent, with a full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. You're not putting this thing in an envelope, send it out to the mail, and then get back a number. Oh, it's a 6.2. Why? It's a, whatever. Too bad. We just said it was 6.2. No, you get all of the rationale, all the explanation of how your card is scored and how it is graded. And man, Arena Club, whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. But there's even better news here, because right now you can get 10% off your first purchase at Arena Club by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Make sure you use that link to get the 10% off your first purchase. Again, arenaclub.com/VOWnet. That is a crazy offer. That is 10% off of your first purchase of anything. If it's a $400 slab pack, you're getting $40 off immediately just by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase. arenaclub.com/VOWnet, 10% off your first purchase. And we appreciate them for sponsoring the Voice Wrestling Podcast Network. Now, back to your show.
T-Hawk. So yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I think your second point, the second part of your statement, is the more kind of problematic part, would be the financial aspect.
That was the first thing when I asked somebody today, that was the first thing they brought up was, well, you know, we're going to need a discount and the money's even then probably not going to be what he wants it to be. But if he wants to do it, you know, I'm sure we can make something work. So it depends on when he's free, because obviously Monday night was his last appearance. But I don't know when that contract officially ends. I don't know if anybody does. And then from there, you know, we'll have to see. I would suspect, knowing what I know about Ricochet, which I, you know, I obviously don't know him personally, but knowing what I know, I would think he's very much in the Pac vein, where even if Ricochet ends up in New Japan or he ends up in AEW, I would think he has interest in doing a Dragon Gate show once again.
Yeah, and I mean, after his main run left, after his main run ended in Dragon Gate, he would still show up for Kobe Worlds, and he would make appearances even when he was based out of New Japan. So I could see that it is going to be something where it's just the money situation is going to be the overwhelming question. And if he wants to, and I mean, Ricochet has a has the old Dragon Gate logo tattooed on his arm. So I don't think there was like a matter of emotion against it, especially with the people that are remaining. Like, I have not done the talk around that you did, but like my like first and worst answer was like, yeah, if the money works, like they would do it. But also it matters if someone else talks to him first.
I'm curious because, you know, obviously he's most linked with Shima and that's off the table. If they were going to do like they did with Matt Sydal 10 years ago, where Sydal came back to wrestling and it was Ricochet and Yoshino versus Shima and Sydal, if they were going to do an all-star tag team match like that, who would you want in the ring with Ricochet?
Well, like, the funny thing is, like, his partners after Shima are still there. Like, then you're talking Dragon Kid and Doi. Like, do you do Die Fly? I don't think you're going to be able to do that if you're looking at July 21st. I think that everyone's kind of tied up at this point.
Yeah, no, and, I mean, Doi and Dragon Kid are already booked.
Right, so I think that you would probably look at Doi and one of those two, and then Flamita and the other one, probably.
But there are all those guys are already booked.
Yeah,
they're in the
all those guys
match.
Are already booked in the Twin Gate match. So I don't know where how you would make that work. Like, then you go down the list. Dia is already booked, and I don't think that it's appropriate for when we get kind of below the Dia kind of position to have like a special singles, like, unless like you're doing like, oh, he is with Kakuta and Tanaka as D Courage against Natural Vibes, but no, but there's probably gonna be a Triangle Gate match of Natural Vibes, so it's tough this year.
What I would do is I would do him and Moshi against Kame and Monte. I think that's, you got to remember, like,
oh yeah,
remember when Ricochet won Super Juniors and Moshi and Tozawa were his seconds, and that was like a really cool thing. I would do he and Moshi versus Kame and Monte, and if not, then he and Moshi against, I don't know, two old guys. Or I mean, maybe whatever's left of D Courage. You know, you could do Tanaka. If Yoshioka's there, that helps. But, you know, Kakuta and Tanaka, I don't think that's below him. It's odd, just given the way everything's shaped out with that four-way tag match. That takes a lot of weapons off the table. Mm-hmm. But as long as Moshi is free, I think there's your big answer.
Well, Monte and Jack are in that Twin Gate match, too. So
oh
they're
my
off
god!
The table.
Oh my god! Yeah. How many guys are in that? I know the answer.
It's
is eight, but
it's eight man tag. Yeah, I mean it's four way. Yeah, with that, but like that's the issue, because Dia would be like, oh, we could talk about like the future of Flight versus the Infinite Carrot Diamond.
But Dia's doing the Hyo match,
right? Yeah. So we get
okay.
To a
so we're doing Kakuta and Tanaka, I guess, unless Yoshioka comes back.
I think we have to do versus Kakuta and Tanaka.
Or, I mean, Ishin and Kai. People will shit on that, but they shouldn't. I mean, I would really like to see Ricochet versus Ishin. A lot of Ishin talk coming up, but yeah, that's odd. I really didn't realize just where we were at there. Because, I mean, I guess, you know, it could be, you know, Ricochet and Mochi against Ultimo and Kondo or whatever. I mean, that's not the end of the world, but what an odd spot to be in.
It feels wrong, though. Like, the card is just that far along construction. Like, we're just at the point where Ricochet, like, you're going to have to break up matches if Ricochet becomes available for that. And then
he could always wrestle Junior.
He could wrestle. That would be a special singles match quality, I would say.
That would be. You know, I still think it's him and Shingo, you know, Junior and Shingo. But if it's not, or, you know, certainly you could say, hey, Shingo, you know, come hang out backstage. Don't bother coming to the ring. We're going to do Ricochet and Mochizuki Jr. instead. That feels like a real possibility if Ricochet is available.
Yeah. And I mean, we're still looking at this that it's essentially, I mean, 6 weeks away. And the card's already in a pretty good construction there with that. But it'll be interesting with Ricochet because there will always be that Shima link and that. But it just feels like, especially like after we spent somehow KS 40 minutes talking about Glate, that even Ricochet probably would look at that as the dead end that it probably.
Who's he going to wrestle? I mean, they'll, you know,
T-Hawk.
It's Shima and Ricochet against T-Hawk and Lindemann. And then what else? You know, and I guess if it's a one-off, it doesn't matter because that is a cool match. I'd be into that. But yeah, I don't want to see him do that. That would suck.
Yeah. So, but Ricochet, it's going to be interesting because I do feel like everyone is expecting for him to go basically directly into AEW. But it would be fun if he decides to make a couple stops beforehand.
While we're here, let's knock this off the list right now. We've got two Kobe World matches.
Yeah, let's do it.
Booked after the Fukuoka weekend. Open the Brave Gate Championship. Hyo versus Dragon Daya. This is a rematch from 2 years ago. Hyo, obviously, at that point was Z-Bratz. And Dragon Daya was still D-Courage. Dragon Daya was in the midst of his really hot run. Now he's coming off the Super Juniors tournament. What do you make of this?
I think that if you aren't bringing in someone for Daya to get his heat back, I think we're okay with him going back for the Brave Gate.
Absolutely.
He feels more hot after Best of the Super Juniors. Hyo has a mission, and it kind of all lines up with that, that if he wants to try to go for 11 defenses, one person he's probably going to need to get through is Dragon Daya, and Dragon Daya feels more than game for that. I think that's I'm happy with that as a Brave Gate match. I do wonder with how the rest of the show is, what kind of match we're going to get. So it looks like we have the Firepower match coming in the other match that was decided out of Fukuoka.
Open the Twin Gate Championship. Dragon Kid and Naruki Doi defend against Luis Monte and Jackie Kame, KZ and Flamita, and Shun Skywalker and Jason Lee. What a match.
And a really good piece of business getting to this. Dragon Kid was left solo over this weekend because of Doi's other appearances. So he proceeded to drop falls. And then Shun Skywalker did the Jackie Knife as well. So we have that. I like this. This better be an elimination tag. I think that's always my consideration when it turns into a 3-4 team title match. But I think that this is your Firepower match. Now this is the one where the Twin Gate over the last few years at Kobe World has been the workhorse belt, and it's going to be put in full effect.
I feel bad saying this, but the betting star rating for this match starts at 4.75 stars. It's probably a disappointment if it's 4.5.
Yeah, this is the one where you really want to see it get 20, 22 minutes and them not blast through two quick eliminations and then just have it be a 2-on-2 match and really base it around that.
I think it's insane that they're doing this, and I think it's insanely unfair of me to expect near perfection off the bat, but I don't know what else to expect. I mean, you have literally put eight of the best wrestlers in the world, eight guys that I think on their best day are top 50 material in one match. I mean, my hat's off to them. I really hope this delivers.
And really, when you look at the kind of position of the Twin Gate division in this regard, you get to have a lot of revisiting a lot of the stronger Twin Gate matches of at least like the last 6 or 7 years, because you're going to have Naruki Doi and Jason Lee in this match together. You're getting Kamei and Shun, and of course, Shun Monte exploding. There's just a lot of different elements in this that I really hope that this gets the semi-main event billing that it probably will deserve, and that they give it the time that allow it to be this should be the match that comes in after intermission. And with the way that Dragon Gate does intermission with the last two matches, and they should give it some significant time and let them kind of explore and play it out. I mean, the wild thing about this is we get like Flamita and Dragon Kid in this match too.
Like, and Flamita and Shun, which I thought those guys crushed it against each other in Korakuen.
Yeah, Flamita, who is really making a case to be the last 15 days MVP of pro wrestling in my mind.
No kidding. No, I mean, I'm so happy for him. But I was taken aback when I saw this, because I thought they would do Dragon Kid and Doi versus Shun and Jason. I thought that'd be a kick-ass match. I still think Shun and Jason are going to win. But to up the stakes like that, it's funny. You know, you and I were talking off the air about the Yamato Twitter storm that he went on a few days ago. And one of the things that he said, and I'm paraphrasing from a machine translation, so it's a dangerous thing to do, but I'm going to continue, which is, you know, everybody wants to call Dragon Gate gymnastics and acrobatics and not wrestling, and yet the rest of the world wants to steal what Dragon Gate does. And this is, you know, the chance for Dragon Gate, and I say this perhaps grossly and editorializing to some degree, but if this match is as good as it could be, I already know that in my written review at voicesofwrestling.com that I'm going to be talking about how everybody wants to be Dragon Gate, and yet there is no substitution for the real thing, in the same way that a good trios match, they are still the kings, in the same way that in terms of elevating wrestlers in one single night with one particular match, they are still the kings. A lot of companies can run a match like this, but if this is every bit as good as we think it's going to be, it's going to be a reminder that they are still the best at this.
Yeah, and it's something that I'm wondering how they put together a Triangle Gate match now on this lineup, because you've taken out, unless Yoshioka is going to like come back through that door, they've really loaded, at least from where I feel like the promotion's at, the title matches are as stacked as they could be at this point. I mean, who would have been a better Brave Gate challenger for Hio rather than Daya? And then why not have No Hug go up against Big Hug, with what we all know about Monte and Kamei in matches both with and against each other? KZ and Flamita really turning it on, especially after last weekend. And then Shun and Jason being like the stalkers in the night, but able to, I'm with you on the thinking that Zebratz is walking out as champion. They've really loaded up at least the first three title matches. It's going to make the rest of the card construction really fascinating, see how it kind of falls through.
I would put my money on Owashi, Kondo, and Sugawara, or maybe even Owashi, Kondo, and Mochi if he's not doing anything. It feels
I'd rather it be Mochi rather than Sugawara. We've done Sugawara.
Well, Mike, I'd rather it be you than Sugawara. You know, you're right. I'd rather have Masaki Mochizuki do most things in life.
fair.
I agree. They've done that before, but that feels like they're going to dip their toes back into a Nostalgia Gate type deal, which again, you know, you look at the card and it's not going to be Minoru, Minorita, and Hulk, I don't think. I mean, I guess Minoru is like this weird question mark too, where who knows what he's going to do on this show, but it would feel really odd if it was them and Gold Class in the Triangle Gate match again at World. So yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. That feels like a nostalgia play, where you get, you know, Mochi, Fuji, and Kondo, or Yoshida and Horiguchi and Kondo, or, you know, something. That feels like the move there.
Yeah, I think that with how everything is kind of stacking up and all of that, that makes the most sense of that. So you've done a little bit of talking around stuff, and you've promised a bit of an update about the YouTube situation. Before we get into some of the other topics, let's tackle this one. What is the state of Dragon Gate's YouTube?
So as of right now, as of the time we're recording, Dragon Gate has no plans going forward to do the YouTube Digest uploads like they've been doing them since January of 2022. I had this confirmed to me by somebody within Dragon Gate today. It's very disappointing. You know, I thought after Dead or Alive, because, you know, it stopped at the end of April. So they did Dead or Alive, but they had the house show the next day. It was the same day as All Together. And so you had guys pulled off due to injury. You had guys on All Together. And I thought, well, you know, maybe it's just this great piece of lost media because it was a really weak-looking show on paper. Maybe they just decided not to, you know, film anything and release it, and I get that. And then they were in Hong Kong. We were like, well, you know, they run a light crew anyway. Anyways, you know, maybe they're in Hong Kong, and then, you know, things continued, and, you know, we got no uploads. And then Jay made the comment he did on the English commentary for the Corkin show about how, and I'm paraphrasing here, but the music man doesn't want to upload those YouTube interviews anymore. We talked about that last week. I'm sorry, the YouTube uploads anymore. We talked about that last week. And so I reached out to somebody today, and they confirmed that there's no plans to do it going forward. And I, at that point, went straight to the office of Dragon Gate with, I mean, you know who I contacted. It's, I went straight to the office and let them know, you know, and I don't think anything is going to change, but just like, hey, you know, the English speaking fans are really disappointed. I think this is a terrible decision. I would, you know, encourage you guys to change your mind on this and figure out a way to do it going forward. So the office is very aware that the English speaking crowd is very disappointed by this. I mean, I started thinking about all of the great YouTube matches that we've had over the years. Forget the King of Gate stuff and the Rey de Pareja stuff. Just the fun, like, hey, look at that Kame and UT tag. You know, those guys killed it with, you know, against, you know, Dai and Yoshioka or whatever.
Stalker Chikawa's homecoming match.
Exactly. There's just all this stuff that I really got used to and got excited for. And, you know, for people like you and I that have followed Dragon Gate for, you know, a decade plus now, it gave us a reason outside of like when you first start covering or following Dragon Gate and you're not totally used to the patterns of everything. Like, I remember in 2013, 2014, reading all the house show results, trying to make sense of what all this was. And then, you know, for a long time, I just didn't care about the house shows and would maybe check the results if I remembered or if they popped up on my feed. And, you know, they were Dragon Gate house shows. They were disposable. But I really, really fell in love with, hey, what's on this show? What do you think is going to make tape? What do you think is going to be good? And I'm really disappointed at the thought of these going away.
And it's something where, at least for me, trying to put myself in the company shoes, if it's really a situation where it's a financial constraint on you thinking that's hurting ticket sales, I strongly believe that there's enough evidence throughout recent wrestling history that there's really not a necessarily like as strong of a correlation with that, I would feel like, especially for an international audience and for Dragon Gate's aims of trying to reestablish itself, not necessarily thinking that they can roll back the clock to 2006 or 2009, but at least like plant their flag in the modern wrestling just world. If you're completely paywalled at a certain extent, and yes, they have the opener on each of the televised shows up on YouTube, but it's also on a YouTube channel that unless you know what you're looking for and have already like subscribed to it, or you follow it on Twitter, you might not be aware that there's a Dragon Gate Network YouTube channel. The Dragon Gate Japan Pro Wrestling YouTube account, though, Case, was pretty explicit and easy to get to, especially for Dragon Gate trying to send guys to the United States and into Europe. It's you had like a as like people who are very tangibly kind of connected to this thing, it's a whole lot easier to go like, hey, here's a whole bunch of YouTube links if you want to book this guy, versus having to rip and like do other playlists and other ways to try to convince people that, hey, you should look at these guys and bring them in. not having everything behind a paywall makes it very, very hard to do that, I feel.
Yeah, whole thing sucks. I mean, it really, it gave me a new appreciation for the promotion, which, you know, is not something that I was necessarily expecting in 2022 when they first started doing it. But, you know, during the SFM 50 arguments that we've had, because as we've discussed on this show a number of times, the panel is not the most Dragon Gate friendly. At least specific people on the panel are very much against Dragon Gate having representation on it. One of the points I made, 2 years ago especially, was like, hey man, I'm watching 100 matches of this guy a year between the televised stuff and the YouTube stuff, and I can assure you that he's doing better than insert main roster WWE wrestler here or insert All Japan guy that you like more. Like, there's just, it helped from an evidence standpoint too, and it was just great having all that footage.
Yeah, and really, I don't know. As someone who does kind of look at footage as such like a strong kind of facet of pro wrestling, it does feel like it's like a massive possible loss for their own history in a way. Like, wouldn't they want to have, like, if someone had like a killer match, wouldn't you want to have the tape of it? If it was in this small town in Nagano Prefecture, and the only way you were going to be able to tape is if you do it yourself, I feel like you kind of owe it to yourself to tape it.
I'm with you. I'm really disappointed by it. I think it's a real shame that they're going the direction they're going to. But again, I have gone to the Dragon Gate office. I have gone to legitimately people very high up to try to make a change. So hopefully that happens. Mike, can we do an on-air production meeting real quick?
Yep, what's up?
So the next topic we've got on the run sheet, that might be a whole episode. That might be next week's episode.
I would like to do that next week.
That would be great. So let's talk about these Fukuoka shows, and then we will bring that topic to the people next week, because it will still be timely. We just have to get that done by the Sunday of next week. So let's pivot there.
Yeah, and being completely honest, I don't feel like tonight we would have the proper enough time to really
No, because I'm looking at the clock and I'm realizing how late it already is, and yeah, I really don't want to do that.
So Fukuoka, as we were talking about, ran a doubleheader at Across Fukuoka. Attendance pretty strong, I would say. I mean, the cap on this building is a basically 700, and that was it before COVID. I don't know how many they could actually get in there, or how many they could claim they could get in there, but a pretty good afternoon and evening session, I felt like, especially on a not necessarily the most complete roster at the moment. Minoru off the shows, Doi doing All Japan work here, but a lot of really kind of fun things happening across the weekend. I feel like we should just kind of pick and choose like what were our special things on the weekend. Ishin has been hitting the Jinshu on people out of nowhere, and it's the most devastating thing. Ishin
fucking rocks. I am so into him right now.
So Ishin was only in the openers on this weekend. It was D-Courage versus Z-Bratz, and then unaffiliated Kanda and Estrella versus Kai and Ishin on the evening session. I actually, I'll say this. The Ishin and Estrella, that opener, my favorite Estrella match since he's returned.
That's what the fuck I'm talking about, Mike. That match, let's talk about that match. That was the evening show. There was a perfect TV style match. And Ishin, here's what if I was in the Dragon Gate office and I was watching that match, until Estrella returns to North America, he's wrestling Ishin every show. That would be the decision going forward. Maybe not on the shows that matter, but every small show, he's wrestling Ishin in some sort of tag, because those two guys bring out the best in each other.
It's the best Estrella has been as a babyface in peril has been against these two. And also being in a situation where like Kanda is just not going to be in that position there. And then when you look at the opener on the afternoon session, I thought that it's really remarkable. Like, again, Ishin really making, I have Ishin right now down as one of my most improved candidates this year, but the best of the Super Junior really worked for Daya, if that opener was any indication. He's like shot up the crowd popularity rankings. The Dragon Gate does like now think, I don't know how much you keep track of this case, where they kind of do like a fan vote to see who gets special seasonal portraits.
Yes.
And Hyo obviously wins because Hyo is like one of the most popular guys right now. Then it's Dragon Kid and Susumu, and Dragon Daya is up there now after Best of Super Junior. So if this is why you send him out there, this is why 1-8 was not a bad deal for them.
I thought the opener on the afternoon show, Ishin Kai and Shun Skywalker versus Daya, Kakuta, and Tanaka, was the best match of the entire weekend.
All right. I like the main event of the afternoon show a little bit more than that one, but
interesting.
Talk me through it.
I thought it was Ishin just being a complete and utter wrecking ball. I thought it was Daya. You know, we have this odd construct with Daya, right, where you and I both know how good he is, and the people around Daya, the people that have met Daya, that have wrestled Daya, that we know, that we've talked to, are all like, man, this guy's really good. You know, there's the famous Ryo Saito story, or Genki Horiguchi story, where they're looking at El Hijo del Vikingo at a dinner, and Genki kind of shrugs and goes, so what, Daya can do all of that, you know, what's the big deal? There's a lot of lore surrounding Daya if you're a 1%er Dragon Gate hardcore fan, but it's also sometimes a little bit hard to show people, hey, this is the Dragon Daya that we all think is this giant deal, because a lot of times he's good and not great. And in particular with this Daya match, you know, it wasn't 4 stars, it wasn't anything special, but it was kind of one of those that I could point to and go, like, isn't it obvious now, like, isn't it apparent why everybody that knows this guy thinks he's so good? Because Daya was flawless in everything that he did.
You know what it was for Daya? Because I was not sold on Daya as a rookie. It took basically into 2020 for me to be like fully on board for him. It was when he came back from his first shoulder injury and really started pushing it, at least for me. But he's a hard person to kind of to put over, and especially like the Best of the Super Junior, talking about him is like there's so many like aspects about him that it's like a Dragon Gate intrinsic thing that I feel like when we like look with hindsight at Best of the Super Junior, he will be like, oh, Dragon Daya was in this tournament, and that's going to kind of be like the weird takeaway when we were like, oh yeah, and he probably could have had the best tournament of anyone, but they just kind of had him play the role of Ryusuke Taguchi throughout it.
Yeah, oddly enough, you know, him doing the hip attack, which everybody was like, oh, it's a tribute to Kakuta. And then I was like, no, it's actually a tribute to Taguchi, which is just a very odd anecdote there. But no, everybody I thought was firing on all cylinders. I mean, Shun is having such an amazing year, and it's not just the high-end stuff that he's doing. It's the little stuff like this where he just commands a certain level of attention in a way that, again, I think very few wrestlers do. You know, Kame has cooled off a little bit going from May to June. And so we're at a point now where, you know, look, Pete Kame, I think, is a top five. You know, it's, you know, what was I saying? You know, Danielson, Ospreay, Kame. And I think we're kind of at a point now where you can shift him down a little bit and you can go Danielson, Ospreay, Skywalker. And I feel very, very comfortable putting Skywalker's resume this year up against anybody else in wrestling.
Yeah. And it's with like Shun, it might be a little bit more difficult what he's pulling off than what Kamei's pulling off, because he's having to do it with like, oh, he did not, other than that match, he had Ben and Hulk, which was doing the Lord's work with BB Hulk right now.
No kidding.
Which is the kind of thing that's not going to show up on the spreadsheet case, but we recognize your efforts, Mr. Skywalker.
Yeah, because it's funny the way some people look at Shun, because I don't think he has a ton of nights where he really takes it off. Now, there are different levels that he can hit, but I don't think lazy Shun is on the level of, say, t-shirt and blue and yellow, or I'm sorry, blue and pink frilly pants Kenny Omega was, or that t-shirt Naito is. You know, there are some guys that have tells where it's like, hey, they're not working hard tonight. You know, this is their off night. And
yeah,
Skywalker has a level where it's like, oh, okay, you know, there's a difference there, but I don't think it sinks to the lows that some of the other people do, which no knock on them. When you're a high level wrestler like that, you can afford to take a few nights off.
And that's like the other side of the coin about us getting house show footage was the aspect of, okay, now we're actually able to really tell when someone's actually taking off a match. Because that was just something where you, if you have a televised show, unless it's a situation like Hakata or Sapporo, where you're doing multiple shows in a very brief time period, there's a recovery time and you're able to like be able to take a break like that. And Shun's taking a quote unquote taking a night off is very different, I feel like, than a t-shirt one. Plus, he cackles like 10 more times. Like, it's the cackling is the tell of people.
Shun was one of those guys because, you know, you go back to 2021 and before when we weren't getting the house show uploads. I think you and I had a perception of the Dragon Gate house shows from things that we had heard from people that had attended them or wrestlers we had spoken to that worked on them. Like, hey, no one does anything on these shows. You know, the reason that their bodies are able to hold up the way that they do is because the house shows are so light. And for somebody like Shun, the perception coming away from those was like, no, Shun actually works way harder on those house shows than I was ever expecting him to.
Right. And then it would be like, oh, Kobe Sambo Hall he's taking on.
Yeah, exactly.
But other fun things on the weekend, we got the one match we really needed to have with Toru Owashi returning Minorita versus Toru Owashi. And guess what? The knee's working all right. Minorita lapped Owashi during the runaround.
What a great spot. What a clever and fun spot.
Yeah, it just was like exactly what I wanted to do and what they wanted to do. And then they immediately, there was a gasp in the audience. Case, I went 3.25 stars on this Owashi match. I loved it. For what it was, that's the thing about star ratings. I gave this thing the same thing I gave Lindemann versus Hayao Tamura. There's good star ratings for 3.25 stars, and there's awful star ratings for 3.25 stars. Minorita and Owashi, great 3.25 stars match. The gasp on the crowd when Minorita tried to scoop slam Owashi, and at the perfect moment, Owashi fell back onto him. This was just like, it was not very long whatsoever. It was 6 minutes. It was perfect for 6 minutes.
Can I give you a hot take?
What's up?
Owashi versus Minorita was not my favorite Owashi match of the weekend.
All right. What about Kanda and Owashi versus Genki Horiguchi and Rhea Fuda tickled your fancy?
Well, to be clear, Owashi versus Minorita was perfect. It was everything it should have been. It was so much fun, but it was fun. The afternoon show, Owashi and Kanda versus Horiguchi and Fuda, the Owashi Fuda stuff, let me tell you right now, if I stumble into money, and God willing that happens sooner rather than later, and I book my For the Sickos produce show, singles match number two, we're doing Owashi versus Fuda, because I thought they had something there that desperately needs to be explored.
And these are the moments where we go, come on, guys, Fuda's back now, please.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
no, it's Fuda's back. Yanagiuchi is ready to be elevated. Obviously, they're going to do something with Mochizuki Jr.
Right.
If Estrella were to stick around, which I don't think he is, but I would put him in a unit. Let's make some things happen here, guys.
Yeah. Instead of having Fuda team up with Ultimo on night two, where he does get a lot of work and they did get like the heat on the Ultimo hot tag, but then immediately it was a big boss press and it was okay. Like, you have someone who is now like, I know the injuries were such a thing where like each time it felt like they were putting him on, where they're turning him online, you were ready to kind of do that. And you have the hesitance now with him coming back, but he needs to start getting the move on, because you also have someone like Ryoya Tanaka, who's probably just like, he should be involved in something good at Kobe World this year, I feel like.
Hell yeah.
Like we got to be doing something with that, with these guys at this point.
What's going to be interesting is if they do decide to put Yanagiuchi and Fuda in units here sooner rather than later, I don't think they'd win a ton. You know, I think Yana Gyuchi in the short term might have more success than Fuda. I think in the long term, Fuda still has a higher ceiling, even though Yana Gyuchi's ceiling continues to rise and rise and rise for me. But you would then hit a point where, like, the bottom of the roster, I guess maybe the new future kid's coming and that solves part of the problem, but your designated loss post would be Horiguchi and Fuji and Yoshida and whoever else. You know, if they put those guys in units, given the way that the rest of the roster has shaken up, then you're talking about no more unaffiliated young guys, which is, I don't know, maybe an interesting problem to have.
And I'd much rather there be unaffiliated old guys and then like a slightly heelish paradox kind of thing happening.
Yes.
Like it works out with that, I feel.
Because that's also an interesting wrinkle is, you know, at some point, Paradox wrestling the guys that are older than them, you know, wrestling Moshi, Fuji, and Kondo, I think is a really interesting dynamic. If they made more of it than just, you know, hey, here's match four on a show. If they wanted to tell a story, I think that'd be a really interesting story to tell.
Yeah, and I think with like the kind of the generational changes, I think then you get to kind of talk about like, oh, what is it for Don Fuji now, like at this point, like entering, God, I mean, coming up on, he'll have his 30th anniversary coming up sooner rather than later. And where he is versus your Dragon Kid kind of is, I think, kind of fascinating here.
Can I throw a fantasy booking scenario at you?
Absolutely. Please do.
This is cringy, but if I was booking, what I would do is around the next Kumamoto show, which would be in the fall, so maybe this is a Gate of Destiny thing, for Horiguchi's 25th anniversary, I would have Horiguchi and, you know, for the sake of argument, let's say Mochi and Fuji, just, you know, Horiguchi and two unaffiliated old guys against Paradox for the Triangle Gate belts. I think that would be so interesting, because again, you would have that, hey, here are the old guys, but here are the older guys, and Horiguchi's got his 25th anniversary this year. I would like to see that story. That intrigues me.
And especially for Kunimoto, I feel like that's the perfect time for there. And luckily, I know that kind of not always going back to YouTube, it does seem like the Kunimoto shows will kind of inherit a position where they'll be up on the network as well. So
you would hope so.
You would hope so. Speaking of Paradox, what do you think of Paradox in this weekend? There's still this very kind of weird not necessarily heel, kind of tweener veteran unit. We had them in the evening session be in the main event at Tomiko's, Yamato, Dragon Kid, Susumu, Kagatora versus Natural Vibe, Strong Machine J, KZ, UT, Fulmita. This was KZ doing a Skyda Skullboy out of nowhere onto Dragon Kid, making his claim for the Twin Gates. I felt like that you had a little bit more from the Paradox side building towards their Twin Gate stuff than really Yamato versus Ben. There was Yamato versus Ben on the opening show, but in a promo, but not really keeping these two guys like in the matchups yet.
I really liked the Big Hug versus Paradox match on the afternoon show. I'd probably put that as my number two match of the weekend. But it was also, I felt like more of a Big Hug match than it was a Paradox match. It was one where, quite honestly, Monte jumped off the screen and I was like, oh, that's the wrestler that I've been looking for 6 months now. It's nice to see him make a return. The main event on the evening show, I thought it was fine. Great finishing stretch. My big thing there with both main events, it has nothing to do with Paradox. It is just the way that, and I think even, you know, a decade prior when he was making a lot more noise internationally, I think he was great, but I don't think he had this. There's something about Flamita right now that is really commanding my attention. And in both the Paradox main event and the Gold Class main event, I couldn't take my eyes off of what Flamita was doing. And I thought not only did he come across like a great wrestler, I thought he came across like a huge star.
Yeah, it's really been one of the more heartening things of his return. I think the 5 years and what have you, it was almost unfair for him, like being that 19-year-old wrestler in 2014. because we got to see such brilliance and such just magic from someone at like that kind of age, where I feel like now, and I felt this pretty strongly in Cora Quinn, but it kind of jumps off the screen here now. He has matured into like a veteran. He feels like a veteran Fumita for the first time.
And he's really grown into this role. You know, I was always a little bit higher on late era Dragon Gate Fumita than others. I had more patience for it. I was a little bit higher on hardcore back knee Fumita than others. I was a little higher on demonic Fumita than others. But it became very clear, and you know, you see this in the way that contracts have played out, that you know, the guy that he brought into Dragon Gate, Bandito, had just completely stolen his thunder and surpassed him in multiple different ways. And Fumita has his mojo back in a way that, you know, quite honestly, I don't know if a lot of wrestlers have the ability to do, where they start off so high. And even though, again, I thought he was a very good wrestler this entire time, his importance throughout the wrestling world, where, again, this was a guy that people were legitimately comparing to Ray Jr. when he debuted, and debuted in Dragon Gate specifically, to being what he was, to being what he is now. A lot of people don't make that comeback, and it is really refreshing to see. And again, he is jumping off the screen every time he's on it right now.
We do have to note there was one misstep. Danny Hodge of our times, Big Boss Shimizu, didn't land the dismount on the afternoon session.
Devastating. So
that was one thing Fumita, like the one step gone wrong. But then when it was nailed in the main event of, oh no, this one was not the main event. When it was nailed before the, did they do Party Anthem during the Shimizu match or at the main event? It was the main event.
I don't remember.
But the crowd popped crazy when Shimizu planted and did the monkey flip right.
There you go. Yeah, no, I'm super into vibes right now. Again, I'm still a little hung up on the Strong Machine J thing. It doesn't feel like his unit. It is, if anything, it is feeling like Flamita's unit more and more.
Yeah, especially the chemistry he's showing with KZ. That's
been really, really into it. I mean, that's, you know, that's the thing with the world tag is, let's say Shun and Jason win it. You can then, and I don't know if Dragon Gate thinks this way, it feels like they don't, but you can go back to KZ and Fumita at Dangerous Gate, and then Monte and Kame whenever they decide to defend them next. You know, that feels, I hope that four-way isn't the only time that those teams interact, because you're right, it does really feel like KZ and Fumita have something there.
And I think for a Twin Gate division that has not necessarily shown the stability one would want to see after the reintroduction of Rey de Parejas, bookending year with, okay, at our biggest show, we have these four tag teams, and then we're going to revisit these four tag teams at Gate of Destiny, Gate of Origin, Corquins. Like, there's enough opportunities of it. I think that'd be a really cool thing for them.
Oh, my God. I mean, this could be a generational feud if they wanted it to be. The talent's there. You know, this could be Speed Muscle versus, you know, Saito and Susumu, and Speed Muscle versus Shingo and Dragon Kid. And yeah, no, this could be something really special if they wanted it to be. You know, the question is whether or not they think like that now, because I could draw up 12 months of Shun and Jason Lee Twin Gate defenses in my head, but I don't know if they think like that anymore. The one thing I'm wondering about, it's a little off topic, but stick with me here. When was the last great Twin Gate defense in Korakuen? Maybe I'm forgetting something obvious, but I can't think of anything right now.
That's going to take me some time to go through.
That's okay. I'm just thinking out loud, where it's like, yeah, man, imagine if Shun and Jason win these titles. They have a chance to defend them in Korakuen, you would hope, and that would feel so huge. I mean, the only thing that really comes to mind is when Daya and Yoshioka won them for the first time. Oh, I know what it was. Hold on, let me stop myself before I get ahead. It was a top 10 match for me last year. It was Susumu and Kondo versus Kano and Kondo.
All right, yeah.
And that felt like a humongous deal. So that was a year ago. So it's been a year since they've done a Twin Gate defense in Quark, and that's why it feels like it's been a while. And that was, I still think that if the right pundits had watched that match, that it would have had way more groundswell support for Match of the Year. Because, I mean, again, it was top 10 for me.
No, yeah. God. And it wasn't a Twin Gate match, but I keep on going back to D Courage versus Susumu and Kanda.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that was, you know, that was a great run. That was that, you know, Twin Gate Wrestling. We'll talk about it when we do the Kobe preview. There is no higher bar in wrestling than an open the Twin Gate Championship match.
Absolutely. And there's no better place recently for the Twin Gate to shine than in Kobe World Memorial Hall. Was there anything else you wanted to touch on with Hakata?
I have one issue with Big Hug.
Oh, is this about the overall? So that we talked our way through that last week.
Well, it's gotten worse. I think Kame looks like shit. I think Monte looks like shit. And I'm afraid that the next time we see Hio, he's going to look like shit. They need to fix this gear, and they need to fix it fast, because Kame and Big Hug has been an odd experiment, right? You know, they have him step away from Vibes. He has the KZ match, which was a really, really great match, but it was, you know, he lost. It was, you know, it was intentional that the way that he lost, but he lost. And then he had the UT match in Sapporo, and he lost that. And then he had the Minoru match, and he lost that. And I just don't fully know what they're doing. I think it might have been a mistake to not have him hit the ground running with this unit and rack up a bunch of wins immediately.
Yeah, it's... his vibe feels really weird right now. Like, the gear makes you want to think BB Hulk. He's not wrestling like BB Hulk. It's just... I don't know if it is the fact that they're still kind of working it out, but Big Hug. And I think of Hio, at least everyone kind of going off of his gear works for him. I think Hio's look still remains pretty decent, but it does not work for the other two.
I agree. Something needs to change there just with the presentation, because I think they're, I mean, look, I'm not breaking any news here. They're all super talented. The trios matches are working to the degree that I like. You know, if you remember when Kame joined them, I said I would just run as many trios matches as possible. I would get the three of these guys in the ring, and I would have them wrestle whoever. And I've been right about the logic behind that. You know, as a trio, they are incredible. But the look right now is really off, and it's really distracting with Kame in particular.
Yeah, and I feel like Kame takes time to figure out the looks and like that, but it's still... kind of sticks out in a weird kind of way. I'm going to run through the results from Hakata just so we have them.
Go
unless
for it.
You get anything else?
Nope.
All right. So the afternoon we had D Courage versus Zebrats. This was the Ishin Jinchu on Ryoya. Kanda and Awashi versus Horiguchi and Fuda. Chokeslam on Fuda. Shimizu and UT versus Ultimo and Estrella. It was the Power Boss on Estrella. Paradox versus Big Hug. Kamei with a Jackie Knife on DK getting the Twin Gate shot out of that. Susumu versus Jason Lee. Jason Lee won with a pinfall. This was kind of a little bit of a disappointment there. A gold class main eventing versus Natural Vibes Flamita pinning Minorita there to end the afternoon. In the evening, Kanda and Estrella versus Kai and Ishin. Ishin over Estrella. Awashi chokeslamming Minorita. Ultimo and Fuda losing with Shimizu with Big Boss Press onto Fuda. D Courage versus Big Hug. It was Hio with the Samson Driver on Ryoya. And there was the Brave Gate Challenge from Daya. BB Hulk and Benkei versus Shun and Jason Lee. Shun doing the Jackknife hold on Hulk. And then the Atomico's Paradox versus Natural Vibes KZ getting the fall on DK, making the Twin Gate match a complete four-way at Kobe World.
Good stuff.
It was a fun weekend for Dragon Gate. They're going to be off the network for the rest of the month. We'll be back with you next week with a very fun special topic episode. Right, Kiz?
I think that might be the whole episode. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely, me too. You could follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. Case is at underscore in your case. I'm at Fujiheya. Thanks for listening to Open Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next time. Take care, everyone.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media. We talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.